stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview with Kevin Morrow, who is currently co-starring in the ensemble production of Race by David Mamet, which is playing at the Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. Kevin's interview is particularly interesting because Kevin could have done many, 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 many things, but his passion for performing, for acting, for singing, for being on stage would not be denied. And so, with the unwavering support of a family that didn't quite understand it, Kevin turned into a remarkable performer. Listen again to the importance of support from those people who matter the most for us becoming who we really are. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about being who we really are. Now, many people think that's some kind of non sequitur. What do you mean, who we really are? How can we be other than who we really are? Now. I know you know. Most of us are at some time or another pretending to be somebody we aren't. But I'm not talking about that kind of not being who we are. I'm talking about the kind where we don't know who we really are. There are times when we think we're being who we really are, and we're really not. That not only have we learned to pretend, but we have learned to deny aspects of ourselves. I'm a psychotherapist, and a lot of what I say in these shows and a lot of what you find on my website come from my practice. And a lot of people tell me that they don't know. They don't know what they want. They don't know what they want to do. They don't know what they like. They don't know. And they say it as though it's the truth. They say it as though they are somehow someone who does not know who or what they are. I always remind such people, especially if they've had children, to go back and try and remember what it was like when their children were 16 months, 18 months, 2 years old. Those children know exactly what they want. They know what they want to eat and what they don't want to eat. They know what they want to wear and what they don't want to wear. They know whether they want to be held. They know whether they want to go down. They know whether they want to, they're sleepy, or they want to know, they know when they want to stay up. They know everything. They never wonder. You're never going to get a 16, 18 month old child say, I don't know. Not unless by that time they have already found out, discovered, learned that it was dangerous to be who they were. And that's what happens, is that we learn so young that it's that we're going to be embarrassed, that we're going to be neglected, that it's going to be ignored, that it doesn't matter what we say, and in some unfortunate instances that we may even be punished for who we really are. And so we learn to forget it. And that's how it can be that clients come into my office at 15, 18, 30, 40, 60, telling me they have no idea who they are, what they want, what they like. And in my belief, it's just a question of getting back to that two-year-old. And I don't mean to suggest that that's an easy thing. What I mean to suggest is that it's still there. Today I'm going to play an interview from my interview series, Anatomy of an Artist. This interview is with Kevin Morrow, who is a wonderful stage actor and performer, who is currently appearing with three other very talented actors at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida, in a production of David Mamet's play, Race. And for me, the most compelling aspect of this interview is the way in which over and over and over again, Kevin speaks to the support, encouragement, love, direction that he got from his parents. It's glaringly apparent that these people did not try and turn either Kevin or his brother into someone they were not. They tried to see who they were and encourage it. And so what we have in Kevin is a full-blown person who is what he is, and you'll hear it. It's delightful whenever you hear it. Anyway, after the interview, I'm going to play a cut from a CD that Kevin gave me so you can hear what a wonderful singer he is, in addition to what an interesting and charming person he is. That is, if you don't get to get down here to Florida and see him in Race. So now, here is Kevin Morrow. All right, I am here in the FST B room. Yeah. This is Kevin Morrow and me.
Right.
And Kevin is currently co-starring in the ensemble production of Race by David Mamet and FST. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
So it's clear that you do that. It is.
Yeah, and I have been for a while. I've been a very fortunate, knock on wood.
I always ask the same question to get started, and that is, how did it start? How did you know? How did it find you?
For myself, I guess it started with my brother, who, let's see, he was 6 years older than I was, and he was in seventh grade, so that means I would have been in first grade at the time, so that would have put me about 6 years old, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, and they had a thing called junior theater, where all the kids in the city can audition for a play, and he auditioned for Aladdin and His Wonderful Lamp. He was one of the thousands that they gave this opportunity to. I went to go see him do it, and he had maybe one line, like, he's here! I don't know. And I was sitting in the audience, and I went, I can do that.
Oh, God, yes.
Now, part of it was me seeing something on stage, and I just loved that. And a large part of it, I think, was I wanted to do what my brother was doing.
Yeah, I want to be like him.
Right. Well, when I finally did get a show, I auditioned the next year for The Prince and the Pauper. At seven for junior theater, and I didn't get it.
Wow.
And was just crushed by that. I didn't get it. And my parents saw that. I think he wants to do something with
this. Do you
this.
Remember the audition?
Yeah. Very well.
Wow.
Very well. Sitting on the stage, it was at Burke High School.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting on the stage in a circle, and had to get up, and they had given us a piece of script to read, and some kids, could read it well, some could not. Whatever it was, I didn't get it.
Wow.
And was just crushed.
your parents saw that this was something
they
you wanted.
They saw there was a little interest that I had in it. And, you know, things pop up in school where you might get a little line or something and get to perform a little bit in front of people. And I got to be that I was able to talk in front of people, and that was not a problem. Mm-hmm. And they're going, oh, okay, so maybe he's going to be some kind of a politician or a speaker or, you know, something of that nature. They didn't think it was going to be acting.
Right, right.
The acting idea for them didn't settle in until high school.
Oh, well, wait.
Work.
You're getting,
I jumped ahead.
Yes, well, you did. And I'm curious about the interim part. So when they saw that you had an interest in this, did they simply say, that's okay, you can do it, or did they take you to classes?
At that point, they fed it.
They fed it.
They let me know, you know, it's an interest, because I also had interest in drums.
Mm.
In third grade, you know, they, at least in Omaha, they would ask kids, you know, you have to pick an instrument to play, and they gave you choices. And I went for the strings, so I went for violin. My brother had gone for the woodwinds. He was a clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
We started piano lessons. Choir director at our church was a piano teacher also. She was a musical director for several of the Omaha Community Playhouse productions. Her daughter and I, Julie, who's a year younger than myself, she would take us to rehearsals, just sit there and watch a little bit, and I was seeing people on stage doing this thing. This is in my, 9, 10, 11 place, and is going, okay.
Ooh, his eyes are shining.
Yeah, kind of getting into that.
You said your parents seem to have been really interested in helping you guys develop whatever talent you seem to have.
As well as sports. My brother was in gymnastics, so they pushed him that way. And of course, me being the little brother, I want to do that too, so I tried gymnastics. I was okay. He was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I was better at track.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, then
long
they,
legs.
Well, yeah. So they were trying, you know, it's like, if you have an interest, let the kid go. But my mother was a school teacher. So it's like, they'll find out what they want to do. I was also interested in being a fireman and a mailman, you know, and that whole.
And whatever it was okay with them.
Yeah,
that's great.
Just figure it out, because they figured that at that point in your life, the kid doesn't know what you want.
Right.
You don't know what you want to do, but you have to find something that they get an interest in. As it turned out later on, I was very interested in archaeology. Egyptology in particular, which that led to, now I'm going to jump ahead for a moment.
Go ahead.
Jump led to one of my minor in college was architectural design, because I loved building.
My God, you're all over the place.
Well, yeah, but they're going, well, they didn't understand, but it said, that comes from the Egypts, from Egypt, in terms of the pyramids and all that stuff, that building, that's what piqued my curiosity in terms of how buildings are built.
Yeah, I am going to stop you again, just to make the point that what your parents did is so wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the sense that any interest is a good interest, you know, and whatever turns you on,
Agreed.
For it. And
because it may spark into something else.
That's exactly right.
I mean,
what it sounds like was there were no blocks put on you. No, don't go that way, don't do that,
No, I was very fortunate in that respect. I would say, at least for my generation, a lot of the kids that I was around, and that generation in general, I think, parents did seem to do more of that than what it appears to me now. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but than what it appears to be now in terms of the influence that parents have in the kids' lives.
Yeah.
As I said, I could be wrong in that, but just my speculation.
In any event, what you have is desirable.
No, most definitely. Most definitely.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. They were always there, and they still are there.
Mm-hmm.
When they realized I was going to make a career of this, which would be coming out of high school and going to college, there were concerns in terms of like, oh, really?
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, really? Okay.
Have you thought about it?
You got to have something to fall back on.
Yeah,
right, always. Right. That was the phrase. And said, well, I have the architectural design. They're going, okay, that's good. That's good. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough. I was one of those kids that I had parents that paid for my college education. I didn't have to work for college.
Yeah.
That was my job. That's they told me, you know, all the way through school. Your job is school.
Yeah.
You don't have to get that job after school. Fortunately, I did not have to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your job.
Right.
To bring home the grades.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And all of your extracurricular activities, you know, whether it be doing plays or shows outside of theater, outside of school, sports, all that stuff, it has to stop if those grades go down.
Yeah, right.
And bragging, I was fortunate if I graduated valedictorian.
Ah!
Doesn't mean I was smart. It just means that I had a great memory because I'm an actor. I remember it long enough to take a test.
You know, that's probably not true. I don't mean that you. I mean, everything you said is probably true, except the part where it doesn't mean you're smart.
No.
All right, never mind.
Okay.
Okay, good. So you go to college.
Yeah.
You have, what, a split major, a major and a minor?
I was majoring in performing arts, communications major, performing arts emphasis, and a minor in architectural design.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So now, do you know then, do you have a particular interest? I mean, did you ever want, do you sing and dance? Do you do musicals?
I always sang. Mm-hmm. And with Claudette Valentine, the music teacher, her daughter took ballet. Mm-hmm. When I was in sixth grade, she said, Kevin, you want to go see Julie's Doing Nutcracker? You want to go see it today? And I went, sure. It was after church on Sunday. I said, sure. So I went to go see it. And looking at the opening, she was one of the kids in the opening. I had never seen a little boy. I didn't know that boys did ballet.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a little boy, Patrick Roddy, who is still one of my closest friends from my hometown. And that was a long time ago. He was a year older. Is a year older, I should say. I saw him and I went, I didn't know that boys did ballet. And the eyes got big again.
Uh-huh.
The next year rolled around after church. Sorry, that was fifth grade the first time. This is sixth grade now. She said, Kevin, they're auditioning for Nutcracker, and they need, you know, little boys for the opening the party scene. And you want to go? And I went, oh, yeah. I said, well, I'll ask your mom. So she asked my mother, and I said, yeah, sure, let him go. That's all right. So he took me to the audition, and what I had to do was watch me march, see if I could march. Can you point your toes?
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like I had a natural rhythm.
Right.
When I finished the Nutcracker, Mrs. Roche, the artistic director of the Omaha Ballet Company, pulled my mother aside and she goes, it seems that Kevin has a natural ability. Now, I don't know how you are financially, but we'd like to offer him a scholarship and let's see where it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
So they gave me a scholarship, and I started, and I made it all the way up to Solo Seal in terms of the Royal Academy of Dancing training. So I am a trained ballet dancer, classically trained ballet dancer, and I did win a scholarship to Joffrey Ballet.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they asked me to join Joffrey, too, when I was 15 as an apprentice. I spent the summer there, and I said, you know what? No, I'm sorry, I was 16. I said, no, I want to go back to my hometown and finish out my senior year as a normal kid, because I looked at what the ballet dancers, what they had to go through, and I went, you know what? I don't have that kind of dedication. I knew it. On the scholarship, I had to take 5 classes a day, and that was 25 classes a week. And I also saw my first Broadway shows. That summer, I was living in New York by myself at 16.
What did you see? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait a minute. So, where were you living?
There was a brownstone that we thought I was going to be living in with other dancers.
Right.
And there would be some adult supervision there. When I got there, it was empty.
You were in a brownstone?
I was in a brownstone.
Where?
84th Street, 328 West 84th.
Wow. I lived on the 87th and Broadway.
Oh, there you go. So you're right around the corner. Yeah, it was between West End and Riverside.
And when was this?
This would be, oh, now I'm going to get my age out there.
Oh, yeah.
This is about the summer of 77, the summer that we caught Son of Sam.
Yeah.
The Con Ed blackout.
Yeah. That was not such a great neighborhood either.
It was fine for me. I was a kid.
But you were
nobody
a kid,
bothered,
that's right.
Nobody bothers you when you're a kid.
That's right.
They don't. Yeah. You know, nobody bothers you when you're a kid.
I know, that's good.
My parents, I knew, don't tell them you're living here alone. Didn't have a phone in the brownstone. Okay. We didn't have cell phones back then.
No.
So I had to go to the corner to phone, you know.
Oh, my goodness. And how long were you there?
I was there for the summer.
Wow.
Yeah, for 3 months.
Summer in the city.
Yeah.
So what did you see?
I saw Annie. I saw Godspell. I saw A Chorus Line. I saw Your Arms Are Short to Box with God. I saw Bubbling Brown Sugar. For Color Girls.
Mm-hmm.
The original Girls. What else? There had to be something. There were so many other things I can't remember.
It's
right
all
now.
Right. That's
but
quite a lot.
That was
and,
that era.
Right.
I had saved all of my money for that. I had a Band-Aid can. Remember Band-Aid cans?
Yes.
I had a Band-Aid can with my quarters, nickels, and dimes in it because that was for my tokens. Because I think a token at that point was about 35 cents
mm-hmm.
as opposed to 250 now.
And there are no more tokens.
Yeah. And they're gone. Right. It's a metro card. Right.
Right.
Not that I'm bitter or anything, but yeah. My parents came to see me at the end of the summer. They put me on the plane to go, and I was met at the airport and all of that. They came to see me at the end of the summer, and when they found out that I'd been living here all summer by myself, and I hadn't let them know, and there was a blackout,
oh God,
and
yes.
all this stuff, and they went, I said, but I'm fine. They go, yeah, wait. I fed myself. I did my laundry. I got to class. There was a bike in the brownstone that somebody had left there with a lock and a key.
How amazing.
Tires were flat. I know how to play. My father had a gas station. I got that bike together. I would ride it to save my tokens.
Yes, of course.
Save my money. Ride down to Broadway, see my show, lock it up, pray the bike would be there when I came out. It was. Ride back home.
You know,
Kevin. They were going, I guess we did okay.
I was just thinking the same thing. I was thinking exactly.
That's what I try to tell them. Now I'm going, you did a good job.
Right.
You did a good job. I thank you. You did a great job. You were great parents.
Right.
I'm responsible. I know what I'm doing. I could take care of myself.
And I can take care of myself.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
I said, so relax. You did good.
Yeah, right.
It's not me. It's you. You know, so I'm not praising myself. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, all I did was listen. I mean, it hit me in the head a couple of times, but I listened. I heard you. So it's a good thing.
It's lovely. Okay. And you... It seems to me that summer was pivotal in so many ways.
It was. It got me off of the track of
dance track.
Of being a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And
it showed you all those musicals.
Yes, and remembering that I love singing, because singing is what I really loved in the first place, and acting.
Yeah.
And dancing was a sidebar. However, my first professional job was as a dancer, so to speak. It was a chorus line when I was 19. And therefore, I got that moniker as being pigeonholed as being a dancer.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for dancers to be thought of other than just that.
Who are you in chorus?
Richie. There's one black character.
Yeah,
it's Richie.
Right, of course.
Yeah. And
right.
His understudy. I started off with the understudy, Butch, in the opening.
What's his song? That's actually...
Give Me the Ball,
Give Me the Ball.
That was my introduction to Michael Bennett. Oh, how I got Chorus Line, which I think is very interesting, personally.
Yes.
When I was in college, mm-hmm. I'd auditioned for Walt Disney, Disney World and Disneyland in L.A., I went to college in California.
Where?
At Chapman College in Orange.
Mm-hmm.
I auditioned, and I got the call. I was hired as one of the two All-American College band dancers. Me and Dana Spicala from, I think she's from Colorado, were the two dancers that were going to go to Disney World. And there was another Kevin and another girl that were doing Disneyland in L.A., which I thought was very interesting. He also happened to be black. Very, very bright. I thought, wow, that's a trip. Okay, they're getting a look here. I got whatever, and the name.
And
too.
The name, right. I was just going to say, you need a black Kevin, please.
Yeah, black Kevin.
Right,
No, sorry. You're white.
Right.
Your name's Kevin, no.
Right.
Down here, and in Orlando, obviously. And we were doing the show, and a girl came up, and an Asian girl came up and goes, hi, I had your job last year talking to Dana. And her name was Lauren Tom. And I said, oh, hi, nice to meet you. She goes, listen, I want to talk to Kevin for a minute. Kevin, listen, they've been looking for a new Richie. I'm here in town doing a chorus line. She was on tour with a chorus line, the international company, as Connie,
mm-hmm.
Connie Wong
right.
in chorus line.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been looking for a Richie, and you missed the audition, but I'll see if I can set up something for you. And I said, are you serious? She goes, yeah. And she did.
Wow.
So she set up an audition for me for a chorus line here in Orlando, while they were there, and I did. It was a private audition. Just the dance captain and myself.
Right.
And he goes, well, you're good, but I can't hire you. Where are you going to be in the fall? And I thought, I'll be back in college in L.A. And he goes, when? And I said, in the fall, like September. And he goes, you know, the national company's going to be there. You'll get a call. They're going to call you. And go down and said, okay, really? And I thought, yeah, right. The call came.
Unbelievable.
So I went to the audition in L.A. There were 401 boys there. I only know this because they told me this later on. 401 boys there. I was the only one they hired that day. There were like five or six other boys that they hired later on in the next few months. But I was the only one they hired that day when I left. I had that job, and I had to leave college.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Then the phone call happens.
And you're 19. So you just started. I mean, what is it? You were a sophomore or something?
Yeah. But
just
I was
going into your sophomore year?
I was overloading. This was when the audition was in October, actually. Sorry, in October. End of October. And... I started rehearsal like within the next week, and I rehearsed for 9 days, and they shipped me off to the international company, which was in St. Petersburg, Florida at the time.
Holy cow.
Hi,
Mom.
Wow. First thing I did was call my brother.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
And told him, and he goes, okay, well, is this what you want to do? And I said, yeah, and he goes, okay, this is your first adult decision.
Yeah, right.
Now...
Oh, what a smart guy.
Yeah, he said, you have to, when you're calling them, you have to remember you're not a little boy now, and they're not going to treat you as a little boy with a decision, because they're paying for your college, and this is the money they're going to be losing, one. You're making a career and a path change completely, completely. Now, I know where your grades are and all that stuff, and I didn't, and he said, are you calling for their permission, or are you calling for their blessing?
Oh, my goodness.
And he said, call me back and let me know what they say. And I called, and we went through all the thing, and I kept the voice, you know, low as was. But Mom and Dad, it wasn't
right,
that.
Right,
it was
right,
just
right.
All the thing going, okay. They were listening, and I said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I've got to take it. Well, what about college? I'm overloading my credits. I can finish this year on the road in term in papers. They're willing to let me do that, and my senior year I'll take care of later on, which I did. I did finish. I did graduate. I did finish. But I had to write a lot of papers while I was gone to finish out that year.
Wow.
So the money wasn't lost, so to speak.
So the college allowed that.
Yeah.
Allowed for that.
I got college credit for it. It was a work experience, and
yes,
I had to write.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So you really launched immediately. I mean, you just...
I had the opportunity to do a Chorus Line. It was still relatively new because this is back in 79. It opened in Broadway in 74.
Mm-hmm.
It was the hottest show for years.
Yeah.
And you know.
I do.
The hottest show forever.
And it's an...
And I met
and
Michael
it's a
Bennett.
Tremendous, oh,
I was
yeah.
working with Michael Bennett.
Right. And it's tremendous credit.
Yeah. Well, for that, to the original, that whole thing with Michael, yes.
Yeah.
And meeting Michael set me up for the next parts of my career in terms of Dreamgirls and introduced me to Michael Peters, which gave me my first Broadway debut, which was Leader of the Pack. And it just, you know, things just started going for me then.
Holy cow. Well,
and they also knew that I was more than just a dancer.
Yes.
They saw me as a singer as well and realizing I could act.
Right. In Chorus Line. Because you can do it all.
Well, from Chorus Line going into Dreamgirls.
Right. Well, but I mean, in Chorus Line, you're having to do it all.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah,
so,
truly, truly.
Right, so it's an audition. You know.
Totally. And most people think of Chorus Line as being, it's about dancers, but the original cast, they were not all dancers first by trade. Many of them were actors first. Who could dance.
Right.
Or singers that could dance, could
right.
move well.
Right.
And some of them were dancers that could also sing and could act. You know, the order of
priority.
Your strengths.
Mm-hmm, right.
You must be the greatest dancers. Not necessarily.
No.
Because at a real audition, you don't see everybody there is not the best dancer in the world.
Yeah, but Richie had to be a dancer, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. However, Ron Dennis was an incredible singer.
Yeah, right.
He was an incredible singer, right. And his energy was all that energy he had.
Right.
That's
right.
What sold him so much. He was
yeah.
a great dancer,
yeah.
but...
Yeah, you're not lacking in energy.
Hopefully not.
No, clearly not.
As I get older, trust me, it's slowing down. You know, it's
if this is slowing down, I can't imagine what it was.
You must when I was 12?
Yeah. Or even 19.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because you do. I mean, not only what you're demonstrating
Thank
here,
you.
But I saw you on stage.
Thank you.
There's a lot of energy expended on that stage.
I will agree. We've been talking about it. It's not as much physical energy in terms of movement, all of that,
right.
but the emotional energy and what that burns.
Right.
It's amazing. It's like I do find that I'm tired, and it's a short show, relatively short, but it's a lot of intensity in a short period. It's like, really, wow.
Yeah, you know, there are a couple of things I want to ask about that, actually, but I just want to make sure that we... So you finished college? When did you do it?
When did I finish?
Yeah, I mean, because it sounds like you went from...
I did, but I was writing a lot of papers.
They let you write papers for your last year?
No, for my last year, I was back living in California, and I was driving down from L.A. to Orange, and finishing that year, this would be 81, 82? Yeah, 81, 82.
It was wonderful in L.A.
Just before I left for Europe.
Okay, so you...
No, wait a minute.
So now you're in New York, right?
Now, yes.
Right. No, I don't mean right now. I mean, okay. So it's Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Chorus Line.
Mm-hmm. But I was on the national tour.
The national tour.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
I left the national tour, finished the college.
So
thing.
You went back to California.
Mm-hmm. Finished the college thing.
You lived in L.A.
Yes.
And now we're talking about 1980.
81.
Okay. So you're living in California. You're finishing your last year of college. Are you working as an actor or something then?
I was taking dance classes videos were brand new.
Yes,
were coming out.
Right.
And I'm not going to go into that. I shot a video with Stevie Nicks. Stand Back, which was fun. That was a lot of blast. And I started doing... the dancer circuit in L.A. of like doing the specials, like the Academy Awards, when they still had dancers and production
mm-hmm.
numbers and all that stuff on
right.
it. I was a background dancer, filling in background dancer for Anne Margaret, filling in for a friend that had injured himself, and also for Cher, the same person had injured himself. So it was that kind of a thing. And then I booked a gig to go to Europe with but the French version of Anne Margaret, her name is Sylvie Vatin. And so I was living in Paris, or in France, off and on for 2 years.
Okay, so now, I mean, I don't want to stop the narrative, but I'm just curious, what the hell were your parents making of this?
I was making a hell of a lot of money.
I'm sure you were. And you were doing something extraordinary.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
You were very young.
Yeah, and you were
doing something that most people don't even... I mean, even people who want to be what you are don't get to do it, and they don't get to do it that young.
True. I guess so.
You guess so? You haven't been looking around?
I appreciate all the opportunities that I had. I was traveling Europe and making money.
Yes.
It wouldn't even cost me anything.
No kidding. And good money.
Yeah.
And so, was there a moment when your parents said, phew, I guess he chose right? Or do you know what I mean? Or did they...
I think they were still worried. I think they were still worried. I don't think the he chose right happened until, well, see, I know when I truly knew it, but it happened before that. When I knew it would be about 2003. Mm. It was relatively recently. But I know that they knew that long before that. It may have been when they came to see me Dreamgirls on Broadway, which would be somewhere around 87, mm-hmm. But my Broadway debut was 85. I'd already been doing sitcoms, you know, at that point, guest spots and things like that, so I'm not sure when the moment happened for them, but they always stayed in my corner.
Yeah. So are you saying that they were still slightly apprehensive?
Wondering if you know, like say, okay, and when do you finish that job? And what's the next one?
Right.
I don't know. You don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's that they're being a parent, they're worried, they're wondering.
Yeah.
I seem to connect. And when you finish that one, I finish that one on the 23rd, and I start the next one on the 28th. You go, you got another one already? Well, yeah, I booked that like 2 months ago. Oh, that's how you do it. You know, they were learning with me,
yes.
So to speak, and going, okay, well. Okay, well, you know, he knows what he's doing, you know.
They're not in that.
No. Completely.
But the truth is... They had no idea, but
they were learning.
No, but, I mean, really, a tiny percentage of the people who choose to do what you do had it the way you had it.
True.
You know, so, and everybody knows that it's a
cutthroat?
Yeah, that wasn't where I was going, but it's that too. Right, you know. I was going to say it's an unpredictable.
Unstable.
Thank you, right. You know.
When I've spoken to kids, like when I go to schools and do lecture demos and things, I tell them, you know what, you really have to have a passion for this. And you have to see that there is nothing else in the world that you can do that would make you happy.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way you're ever going to get the slightest step forward. Doesn't mean you're going to get to whatever that final point is by any means. But you have to feel like this is all you can do. There have been times in my life when, sure, I've called and I've talked to Dad and going, Dad, I don't know. Da, 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 and I start whining. So the beanie goes, okay, look, you done? Okay, look. What else can you do? And I go, well, it's just, that's what I thought. You can't do nothing else. So, man, I'm going to do your job. That's your job.
Yeah.
Bottom line, I'm going, okay, it is. That is my job. This is what I do. So... I don't have a choice.
See, I think it's actually something deeper than that. I think it's who you are.
Oh.
You know?
I want to believe that.
Yeah, no, no. When I hear it a lot, I mean, I hear it over and over mm-hmm. again because I always interview people who have created a life from some art.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if it's painting or it's dancing or it's sculpting, it's writing, you mm-hmm. know. When somebody has been captured the way you were captured, the description of seeing your brother on stage mm-hmm. and knowing even then at 5,
yeah.
you know.
I got to do that.
Yeah. Right. And that, I think, is the thing that you can't give that away.
True.
You can't, nobody can, somebody could want to do that, but if they don't have that, they can't survive the tough times.
You know? And there are tough times.
That's exactly
you
right.
Know, it's, you know, as I've been extremely fortunate in this career that I've never had a day job.
Fortunate doesn't even cut it. I mean, it's remarkable, actually.
I've never had more than one roommate, you know, which is a big thing. And normally, I've been living by myself, you know, except for the period when I was married, but, you know, by myself, me and my cat. Oh. I know it's weird, but I got my cat, and she's here with me, as a matter of fact.
Good for you.
Well, got to travel with my baby girl.
Yeah.
I've I take it back to my parents, saved the money so that I was able to provide for myself. I didn't have to rely upon having a roommate to share my expenses.
Right. So that you could survive.
Yeah. On my own, if I needed to, wherever I could. And I love my apartment in New York. I own it.
You do?
Yeah, I bought it 21 years ago.
Oh, my God. Where are you now?
I'm uptown in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now the new Harlem.
Oh, yes, right.
When I bought it, it wasn't the new Harlem.
No,
it was the old Harlem.
Bill.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He's 20 blocks from my house, where his office is.
God bless him.
And that shot my real estate up.
Oh, yes, yes, it did.
my apartment is now worth approximately 9 times what I paid for it.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Mortgage is all paid off.
Oh, my God.
I'm good to go. I knocked, 16 years off the mortgage, so.
Oh, my God.
I was very fortunate in that respect.
And again, this is all your early training.
Well, yeah, but that's what I said. It's back to mom and dad. You did good.
You did good.
And they
can you can send this to them.
And thank you for hitting me in the head when you needed to or when I needed it, whatever the case may be. I can't complain about that.
No, clearly you can't. So. Okay, so now, this is an interesting play.
Yes.
Let's just talk a little bit about it. How do you feel about it?
First of all, I'm very, very glad to have the opportunity to do it. I had auditioned to understudy David Alan Greer in New York, and I did not get that cover, but I did get the opportunity to meet David Mamet. I auditioned for him, and he worked with me a little bit, which was great. So I understood a little bit more, I think, where he wanted the character to go. Didn't book it, but that's okay. I'm getting this opportunity now. The play itself, I love the questions that it's asking to people, and my personal opinions, and this is my personal opinion, is I enjoy the PC that we've gotten in our country, the PC ways we've gotten, but I think to a degree we've gotten too PC, where some things cannot be discussed, and race relations and the double standard that goes from both sides needs to be discussed.
So you're saying you think this play does that?
I think it makes people go out and talk.
Yes.
I think it makes people start talking. Some of the things that provisions that Mr. Mamet put on the play is that we cannot have discussions 2 hours before or 2 hours after production.
What discussions?
With the audience, as in talkbacks.
Really?
And this would be a great play to do that on.
No
but
kidding.
He knows that. And he wants people to know, take it home with them, and they can discuss it with their friends among themselves in the car, because people do.
Yeah, right.
They're talking all the way through intermissions from what we are understanding. Right. And immediately after the show, they're just going, what do you think? And it's on so many different levels. Whether he's guilty or not.
Right.
If he's guilty, what he's actually guilty of. Why did he do, I don't want for people that may not come to see it, why he does what he does at the end of the play, for what reason, where is that coming from with him?
Right.
What is the relationship between the lawyer and the clerk?
The white lawyer.
The white lawyer and the clerk. Right. What is that saying about the white lawyer? What did he just discover in himself about his prejudices or not?
Yes.
Is the girl correct?
Yes.
Henry, my character, Henry. What are you saying?
What are you saying?
I mean, it sparks a lot of questions for people in terms of race. And as I said, the double standard, and on both sides, the double standard. It's okay for this side to do this, not for that side. But this side can't do that, but that side can.
And how do you feel about your character?
I like him a lot. I like him a lot. Someone from one of the other shows asked me the other day, without these specific questions about my character, and he said, does he think that he's guilty or not?
Does your character think that the client is guilty?
That the client is guilty or not, and I said, it's irrelevant.
To him?
It's irrelevant to Henry, my character. It's irrelevant to him.
Yeah.
He's doing his job. I'm to defend this man, and that is Henry.
That's right.
That's irrelevant. Henry does, in my opinion, get emotionally involved in this case for one moment when it involves the client's old roommate and that relationship.
That's when he gets hot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the second time he gets hot, but yes.
The first time he gets hot is?
The first time he gets hot is the girl. within the first scene, the girl and her business concerning the check.
Oh God, yes.
And all of that.
Yeah. What she did.
But right. That is based on the idea of he didn't like her from the beginning, and his reasons why you find out later on.
Right.
Because Henry.
Wait a minute. There's another thing in there, and that is, she. If he believes that. Well, I mean, she backed him into a corner. I mean, that's enough of a reason to be pissed. No?
Yes.
Even if he liked her.
Right. She backed us into a corner.
Right.
To me, Hank has always had a suspicious feeling about her anyway.
Yeah. It's clear, but even if he didn't have that,
right.
would be good enough
you
reason.
You backed us into a corner.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, in your limited experience, as I said, what?
Right.
You don't know what you're talking about. Right. He's had to work for where he is. She's had to do some work, but she was handed
this job. That's not what you mean.
No, she was handed this job. She was handed the education. She was handed the opportunity. Hank had to work for the opportunity. Yeah. It's not that she didn't work when she got that opportunity.
Right. How much older than she is he?
He is.
Are we talking about different generations?
He's 25 years older. Yes. Yeah, affirmative action wasn't happening when he was there.
No, it wasn't even.
No, not even thought of.
Right.
Gotten here because so you don't understand.
That's right.
And it's that whole thing. And she has that attitude about it, you know.
Right. Okay, so he gets hot over the roommate.
Yes, because to me, it's probably something that Hank dealt with in his past, having this kind of a thing, and this kind
Hank
of
pander to that.
This rich, excuse me, but white boy. That attitude, that arrogance that they have, because Hank
and having to pander to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Hank did go to great law schools and had to deal with that kind of boy.
Right.
And you all think that that's just fine, don't you?
Yeah. Right.
You know, and I can't say anything because I've got to get from here to here, and you're in my way to get there, so I'm going to have to deal with you in a pleasant way to get there.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that way.
Right.
That's Hank to me.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
He's trying to be an honorable man,
but he's doing his job. And as I said, it's irrelevant. That's not the point. My point is, my job is to. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
I'm to defend you.
Right. Well, and
I think you're guilty or not.
That is what lawyers are asked to do in our culture. I mean,
that's the law.
That's the law. That's exactly
Which is another issue that people talk about after the play in terms of the law. That really is the case, isn't it? Yep, it is.
You think a lot of people don't know that?
I don't think people think about it until they're actually having to deal with it. A lot of people don't have to deal with the law in their day-to-day life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Because a lot of these things came to mind to me working on the play. I'm going, oh, yeah, that's true, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it. I mean, in terms of a lawyer, I deal with a lawyer.
Yeah, right?
Deal with a lawyer in terms of contracts.
Right.
In terms of when you're buying real estate, you know, or mortgages and all that stuff.
Right.
But otherwise, lawyers in terms of criminal law, most people don't have to deal with it, which is a good thing. But you go, wow, it really is. Yeah,
and I do think that they make that point, the play makes that point, even just in...
The best story.
Well, in
terms... Who tells the best story?
Right, the most believable
story.
That's right. But I mean, in terms of what the client does, how the client doesn't get it.
Right.
You know,
how
he wants what he wants and it's not there to be gotten.
We know you want to confess to something.
Right.
But you want to get off, don't you?
Confess to me, right?
Yeah, tell it to me.
Tell it to me.
Whatever it is you want,
tell it to me.
You remember that. Thank you, because that's...
Oh, yeah, no.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're not telling me, you've done it.
Yes, right.
Feel absolved.
Right.
I am.
Right.
I'm glad they couldn't see that. I've been in so much trouble. So not PC.
Wow. Okay, so, do you have things you'd like to do you haven't done? Do you write?
Yeah, but I'm not a good writer. I don't think I'm good. I have several synopses written.
You mean ideas, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm not good at writing. I mean, sitting down and going line for line for line for line. I can come up with ideas. I can get a whole passage that I go, that's great. My best friend who I met during Chorus Line 30-something years ago, he's a wonderful writer and a wonderful director. So he's helping me figure those things out.
Great.
Which is really cool.
Are we talking about a play, a script?
Scripts, whether it be for a film or play,
It's
still undecided. Or something may turn into a musical. We don't know. But it's just things. It's just a little side thing that I do. It's not something that I commit a lot of time to. And I really should commit more time to it. He does. and he's trying to get me on to do it, getting on me to do it. Ron, the guy that plays our client in the play, he asked me the other day, he said, Kevin, what role would you like to play someday that you haven't played yet?
Yeah.
And I knew immediately, I said to him, I said, King Arthur. And he goes, what? And I said, King Arthur. I've always wanted to play King Arthur in Camelot.
What? Oh, Camelot. Oh, my God.
I've always wanted to do King Arthur. And I'm thinking, why not a Black Arthur? It's a mythical place. The round table will be consisting of multiracial knights.
Because
it's supposed to be the best knights around the world, right? How come they're always all white?
That's a great idea.
I mean, I'd like to see an Asian one, an Indian one, one from Africa. Right.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, all of that. Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's such a great score.
I think so, too. It's a long show.
It's a long show.
And it doesn't get done very often. Yeah. It's one of those people go, oh, it's one of those old ones. But
oh, no,
I think if we could tweak it, not change it, but just tweak it so it feels more today. Keeping the same story. Now, I don't want to change the dialogue or anything, but just the look of it, the feel, the general feel of it. Just, this must be something.
So are you interested in producing? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to produce.
I can hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is a play that I saw in London called Dealer's Choice at the Chocolate Factory. I believe it won the Olivier like 3 or 4 years before I saw it. And I saw this probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And my immediate thought was, I need to get the rights to this and transfer it to New York. Now, it's all Brits.
Mm-hmm.
It's 6 or 8 guys that play poker.
Mm-hmm.
Once a week, or is it once a month? And they all have a gambling addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that they will do to play this game, the things they're giving up, is the crux of the piece. But I thought, if we set this, let's say, in New York or Chicago, just America in general, and these 8 guys who, by British standards, are all from different backgrounds, whether it be that somebody may be from, maybe an East Ender, you know, they're all East Enders, and someone's very posh.
Yeah.
I think there's a Pakistani guy. It's dealing with all of their different racial groups that they have in London, mm-hmm. but they're all Brits.
Right.
Make it American, and we'll have, you know, Hispanic and Black and
Southern
and Southern, and we'll still have the rich, and
right.
So the color will change. The dialogue is going to have to be altered slightly because of that. But it would be
it's a
wonderful little piece.
It's a little like what 12 Angry Men does.
Yes,
It's the same idea that you've got all of these people from different backgrounds of. Converging on one thing, you know, they're stuck in a room, essentially, and then you learn everything
about them.
So, have you been working on this? I mean, did you?
One of my ex-agent and I had started trying to secure the rights, and we found that it was supposed to be moving to New York. That was 2 years ago already, and it hasn't happened, so to find out what the next day, what's next steps are.
Okay, so you've got lots of stuff, lots of plates in the air.
Hmm.
Lots of ideas.
And still trying, ideas, and still trying to keep my
to work.
Career growing.
You gotta work.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah, I gotta keep my career going.
Yeah, right.
So.
Okay, the thing I like to ask if there's anything I didn't ask that I should have, and I'm also, just to think a little bit about what it's been like to dedicate an entire life to this work, and if there's anything you would say about that.
I feel very fortunate to be one of those few people in the world that I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was a way that each person could do what they really love to do. It seems like it would be a much happier world if everybody was really enjoying their job.
Yeah.
However, there are things that have to be done in this world that nobody really wants to do. I don't think that somebody would voluntarily say, yeah, somebody would say, I want to be a garbage collector. I want to be the person that cleans out the sewers.
Right.
You know, that's their passion. If it is, God bless you and go for it because you'll be happy. Unfortunately, everybody doesn't get to do what they love to do. And what they love to do is not new. In my opinion, is probably not as fun as what I get to do. And what I get to do, it has lights on it.
Mm-hmm.
It has sparkly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shines. It's fantasy. It's magical. It's all those childhood things that we see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boys and girls see it. They just may not admit it as they get older. Boys may not admit it, but everybody likes something shiny. And what I get to do, it does shine. I feel very fortunate in that respect. And very blessed. What was it, part two of a question or part three? Or that is?
Well, it was if there was anything I didn't ask you and just what it's been like to live this life that is completely focused on this art.
It's, judging from the friends of mine, like say from high school or college that are not in this business, it's been very, very similar to the climb when you start off at the bottom in the mailroom. And you got to work your way up to that executive suite, and I'm not at the executive suite yet.
Yeah, but you didn't really start in the mailroom either.
But I've had to go to the mailroom in other places, other times.
I believe you.
You know, it's,
I believe you.
Know. You.
And really, I think what you were saying earlier about the need for the passion—that's what gets you through the mailroom.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
got to just. You have to believe. You have to believe in yourself because there are going to be a lot of people out there that are not.
Yes, I think that's a really important piece, actually. And, you know, that takes us kind of back to the beginning, which is you had parents who believed in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
they believed that you had the right to be who you are.
Yeah.
That's an extraordinary gift. This has been wonderful.
Thank you very much. I've had a great time.
Me too. Thank you, Kevin.
Well, and it won't come as a surprise to anyone who's been listening to the show to hear me point out that what makes Kevin's life as easy as it is, and I don't mean in terms of the success that he's had, but in terms of him following his heart, his dream, his passion, who he really is, that he had this support from the very beginning to be who he really is. And that, of course, is the point of the Lynn Show. That the closer you are able to come to being who you really are, the easier life is, the more satisfying life is. The less conflict, internal conflict, I'm not guaranteeing the absence of conflict with the outside world. And as Kevin points out towards the end of the interview, even Kevin, for whom much of this was beyond easy, paid his dues in one or another mailroom, which is to say there were times when he didn't get work. There were times when he wanted a job he couldn't get. There were times when he wasn't sure this was the right thing. But even in those times, what he had was the absolute certainty that who he was fine, and what he wanted to do was right, and that he could continue to pursue it. And even to the extent of getting that message from his dad later, even when after they were not sure that this was a safe thing for their baby boy, they were still able to support the boy / man that he really is. So, as always, I hope that as you are listening to Kevin's certainty, you know, the ease with which he talks about himself, who he is, what he does, without any guile or self-consciousness or defense. There's just, this is it. You know, what you see is what you got. So while you're listening to that, I'm hoping that you are asking yourself, is this who I am in the world? Am I able to be the very best of myself, the very worst of myself, and not feel compelled to cover it with a cover story? You know, cover story is one of my favorite concepts, and you can hear about that in earlier shows and read about that on my website in earlier podcasts and in the book, of course. But you can hear in Kevin, there is no need to cover over. So are you presenting a cover story? Are you needing to present someone you aren't really? Do you even know it? That, of course, is the point of the Lynn Show, that it is possible to be the real you, and the closer you get, the more satisfying the life. So, as promised, we're going to go out on a cut of Kevin singing a song from a show he was in, so that you get some idea of what he really can do. Unless you can get down here to see Race, which is still playing through March and into April, I believe, at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida, and so, so worth seeing, if only to see Kevin's amazing performance. But before I do that, I need, as always, to thank the remarkable, terrific, amazing Josh Hackney, who recently built me a computer, although we haven't had time for him to show me how to use it. But if you need any help with recording, electronic, computer, web, any of that, you want Josh, and you can get him by going up on my website, which is where you can also get information about me, past podcasts, information about the book, all kinds of stuff. Though that website is thelynnshow.com, thelynne, don't leave the E out of Lynn, SHOW, thelynnshow.com. And as always, I hope that you heard something that you can use today. Something that you knew but had forgotten, something you didn't know, something that you're not quite sure about, something that will bring you back. Because, as always, I will be here same time next week, and I hope you will be too, and hear Kevin Morrow singing Angels.
Angels outside my window. Get on. Well, I
I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper.